Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story Is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Yeah. This is episode 172, and we're going to talk about Leviathan Wakes, which is a novel by James S.A. Corey, which is really a pen name for two people, Daniel Abraham and Ty Frank. And it was published in 2011. Space opera time. Space opera time, yeah.
Much.
Yeah.
And there's evidently a sci-fi TV series based on this book, and there are a number of other books that have come after it.
Yeah.
Five or six or seven.
The Expanse, so. I believe it's called The Expanse.
Yes.
And yes. They're up to volume 6 in this series.
In the show?
No, I don't know anything about the show. I saw an episode of it when it came out. Didn't dislike it anyway. I don't remember feeling strongly either way, but I just never continued.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things that's just out there for when I'm ready, I guess.
Right, or not necessarily.
Or not, yeah. Right. So this was a good book. It was a book I would describe it as sort of a Star Trek / Firefly level space opera. Ships flying around, some heavy stuff in there, which surprised me, when we were getting into the real meat of the book or the real action part of the book, some stuff that was being thrown around was really thought provoking. And,
it's for me, I remember when I was reading it, my daughter Rose read it first and I'd had it recommended by a couple of people. And then thought, I don't know. I read the beginning on Kindle and said, maybe sometime. And she said, well, I think you'd like it. And it was really effective because it's a cliffhanger. So you're just, I was sprinting through most of the book.
Also,
they had a feel back to this old school science fiction way of writing in a lot of ways, of showing you all these different ways that humanity has adapted to different environments. And so the authors said that they wanted to look at a time, future time, in humanity's trip to the stars, but before they'd gotten out of the solar system. So you're looking at people who, well, we don't really see Earth, but from Earth, Mars has been colonized. I think the moon has been colonized. And then various asteroids and Ganymede, which is, I think, Jupiter's moon, has been colonized. And then there are all people living on little asteroids in the asteroid belt, and they're called Belters. And so you've got all these different factions of humanity, which becomes obvious very early that they're all, it's like different countries.
And the ship at the opening is coming in from Saturn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's an ice miner.
Yeah, bringing water.
Yep.
The places that don't have water, like Ceres. So most of the action is happening on various spaceships, on Ceres, on Eros, which is an asteroid, some in one of the outer belt headquarters, various places. So you're getting taken all over the place. And it's interesting to see the different people's point of view. The book is told from two points of view. One is Jim Holden, who winds up leading a little band of people on this adventure. And the other is Miller, Detective Miller, whose first name I can't remember. And he is a disillusioned detective on the police force in Ceres, who gets a special case assigned to him and, like a bulldog, is going to follow that case. And that goes on through the whole book, too.
Yeah, so Miller is a Belter, which you'd call a Belter, right? Mm-hmm. And then Holden,
he's an Earther.
He's an Earther, okay. Yeah, because I know that his job was on the spaceship Canterbury. He was one of the officers on that, yeah.
Yeah, he'll talk about his Earth family,
mm-hmm.
which kind of throws a little imagination into the way social. I'm blanking now. It throws some insight into the way people look at families and different social structures on Earth now, too.
Yeah.
But he mentions them fairly frequently.
Right. And was he, you know, I'm sorry if I get these facts wrong, but wasn't he the one it was talking about he had multiple parents? And it was almost like a genetic combination test tube type of a thing? Yes, all of
them. Yeah. And he was the only kid because when you did that and you had a kid, you could get a certain amount of land.
Hmm.
And land is at a premium on Earth.
Right, right.
So that's how it worked. So yes. Then he would talk about various of his eight parents. And at some point in the story, thinking about Earth becomes very important. And he, because he's got that bond, he keeps bringing it back to the basics, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
That way. But anyway, so... Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the story is basically the people on the big spaceship you're talking about are coming back and they hear a distress signal. Well, I guess there's a very small intro that doesn't make a lot of sense when you're reading it, I think, the first time. But a small spaceship has been attacked and a young woman named Julie Mao has become, she's hidden and gotten away from everybody, the space pirates, who've attacked and we think probably killed most everybody. And that takes us through a little bit of her experience and then it cuts off. No more from her.
Yeah. Before you move on, that scene reminded me of Bester. Remember Alfred Bester? The Star's My Destination, that mm-hmm. the main character survived like in a closet while the ship around them was disintegrating and things.
Totally forgot that.
Yeah, it just reminded me of that. Yes. There were a lot of moments like that in this, you know, mm-hmm. sort of things that harken back to science fiction that's come before.
Yeah, because a lot of this felt like that old Asimov or Heinlein stuff without being exactly like it.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, and that's kind of, I think, also what I was really enjoying is it was just solid science fiction. Other points were being made as those books would make them, but they never did it at the expense of the story itself.
Hmm. Yep.
And so I liked that. Anything else? So before I...
No, please continue. Yeah. I just wanted to throw that in there.
So we're basically then the big ship that hauls ice. We see some of that and they come across a distress signal and they're like, dang it. Okay, fine. We'll check out the distress signal. So Holden and a group of, I think it's four or five people, go with him in the little ship shuttle or small ship to check it out. And the captain has said, this is really a weird placement for this. No ship really should be here of this sort. So if you see anything weird, just take off and don't worry about it. We'll know something. It's space pirates or something. And he keeps going, anything weird? No, that's not really weird. Anything weird? Not really weird. So he keeps going to the point where they find out it's a setup. And then he's like, it's a setup, back to the ship. And in the meantime, ships appear out of nowhere. There's a huge attack.
Mm.
And then we cut over to, run away. And then we cut over to Detective Miller, who has his own problems on Ceres. He's got a partner who is an Earther also. And he can't fit in, Havelock. He doesn't understand that there's this innate distrust of people from Earth. He doesn't understand all this stuff. So they're going around and solving small cases, looking into things. That gives you the feel of Ceres, also the feel of this tension between people who are now from such different environments that they look different. So people from Ceres are taller and thinner. They haven't had as much gravity. You know, the Earth people look short and squat to them and this sort of thing. And that gives you a nice look at everything. And what they start finding out is that the mob on the planet is acting in very odd ways.
And you think
that's what the story is going to be about, and it kind of is. But one of the things I like about these authors is they're really good at leading you along a very straightforward-seeming story, and then you find out that was actually not the main story. It was kind of a side plot, or it was a reinforcing fact for something else that didn't even show up on the radar.
Right.
During this time period, Miller's given a special assignment by his captain, which is to look into the disappearance of a young woman who's from one of the richest families in the galaxy, or in, you know, their little, the among Earth people, or among any humans. Mm. And so her family's very rich and influential. And he said, well, our daughter disappeared. Can you find her for us? So they call it, it's called in their slang, a kidnapping.
Right. And what's the name of, what's her name?
Julie Mao.
That's right. Julie Mao from the opening scene. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So he's kind of like, well, I'm kind of interested. I'll go off and do this. So as he does, he gets more and more absorbed. And so what happens is we juggle or back and forth between these in very short, compelling chapters that somehow convey a lot of information between Holden and his situation, when basically his, not to give too much away because this happens right away, his big ship is blasted out of the sky.
Hmm.
And they're able to hide and get away.
Yeah.
And so what does he do with all this information? What do they do? They're cast adrift. They shouldn't be able to make it anywhere. And because they're pretty far away from everything. And then Miller and the kind of roiling political situation that you see on series with the mob. And how does he balance the detective relationships? How does he help his partner? And where does his investigation of Julie Mao take him?
Right. Yeah.
And so, yeah. So you.
Yeah. So that's a spoiler-free version, right? And then it really takes off, I don't know, a third of the way in or something like that. I don't think it was quite halfway, but for me, you know, all this setup stuff is going on, and not that it's not exciting. I mean, the mm-hmm. I was way more interested in the Holden stuff than the Miller stuff until later, when they both became equally interesting to me. Mm-hmm. About a third of the way in.
I felt the same way the first time through, and the second time through, I was really pleased to see how well the story held up and how much more I was seeing in the story, and especially in how carefully structured it was and what it revealed, where it led us, how what the two people are finding is leading them on seemingly divergent paths. But of course, we know if we're spending all this time with these two characters, they're going to come together. What they have to say is going to enlighten each set.
Right,
so
yeah.
For me, I was interested much earlier than that. I couldn't put it down.
Wonderful.
I think I read it in 2 days or 3 days.
Nice. That's great. And it's a big book.
Yeah, it's a very big book.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also easy to read.
Yes, agreed. Absolutely. Yeah, those short chapters really make for, flow. It was really good.
Well, and also it makes for a lot of frustration, I'll have to say, because I would be deeply into their problem. And then, no, here's Miller on the space or on series. And I'm like, no. Oh, now here's Holden. No. So I really got into
oh, man.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I love it.
So
cool.
Get it and read it. Because even if you just read it as an adventure, it's really a good adventure.
Yeah.
Yep, I think.
I agree.
And obviously there's more. I wouldn't have picked it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Off to spoiler territory.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
First of all,
yeah.
Was that not one of the most fascinating alien ideas, this proto-molecule?
That was interesting. Yeah. Yeah. It's not something that I haven't seen, but in the presented exactly like it is. You know, I'm thinking about things like the Andromeda strain.
Right.
I think in Firefly, that's another sort of a similarity with what do they call them? The Reavers?
Mm-hmm.
The Reavers, kind of this insane. I don't know if it was ever stated that it was a virus, but it was something that was out there that was being passed.
Well, it was genetic manipulation by the government in order to make people able to live out there in a different way. I can't remember.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And but somehow it's transmitted like a virus.
Well, it was in the water, put in the water supply.
Yeah, right. And then I remember, there was a really good James Tiptree Jr. story. Oh, I wish I could remember the name, but it was about a virus put on the planet by aliens that made all of the males extremely aggressive.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and, their goal was to take over the planet, after
Yeah.
You know, they were patient. You know, just let this loosen and wait a minute.
Yeah. It was the long game for them.
Exactly. Exactly. But it's a terrific story.
Well, the thing
the screwfly solution just popped in my head.
Oh, right, right. Yeah, I've been talking about that.
Yeah.
Maybe for me, yes. And I had thought of the Andromeda Strain. I hadn't thought of the Reavers because that was from our the humanity's own government and in the water supply. So that's, you know, one of those things. But the thing that I found interesting was that it was intentional, and not having read that James Tiptree story, that it was deliberately sent. And don't they say at one point toward the end of the story, they're like, they couldn't have sent it to interact with humans because it was sent 200 million years ago before there were humans. So what were they trying to do?
Yeah, what were they trying to do? And there, right. I remember it might have been Miller who commented that he felt like whatever was happening here was incomplete. Mm-hmm. It was like, you know, I see what's happening to these people that are getting this virus, but it just seems like something significant is going on here. I mean, other than the fact that they're, you know, trying to destroy everything, it seemed to be bigger than that. You know, so I remember him stating that.
Right.
And that may be setting something up in the future, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and I've read the next two books. And so what you find out in the second book, which I would say, you know, it's fine to read, but it's not necessary in a lot of ways, because to me, the only thing that you really find out from that book is what it was that molecule, proto-molecule was there to do.
Oh, you do? Oh.
And it's a fine book to read, and I enjoyed it well enough, and they tell a great story. I would say in the next, from all the books, well, in the next two books anyway, they go from telling from two people's point of view to like four or five people's point of view. And I thought that was a bit lazy. I didn't think it, or maybe self-indulgent. We didn't need to see inside all those people's heads. It would have been a better told story if they'd have just picked two, maybe three people.
Interesting.
From their point of view. And so that kind of slowed it down and told me a lot of stuff. I didn't feel like it kind of dragged the story down for me. And the third book was the same way. But they were both exciting enough and interesting enough, and I wanted to know what happened, and so I read them. But when I got done with the third book, I was like, no, I see what they're going to do, and I'd like to know, but I'm finding this style of writing now so annoying that I don't want to do it, even though I was reading through them at a fast pace because of the adventure. And I thought maybe I'd watch the TV show at some point just to see where else the series took you.
Interesting. And I assume that the TV series is still going on. I haven't heard anything about it lately, but I assume it's still running.
That's my guess, because it's really hard to get copies of this book from the library. They have two or three copies, and they're always checked out with one or two people waiting. And so I assume that's from the TV show.
Hmm. Okay. So. But yeah, but anyway. I did think it was a super effective. I mean, to have this occur from outside, you know, while humanity's, you know, just getting rolling into space, you know, it's definitely an obstacle.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But I did like it. I thought it was cool. Yeah. Super difficult. Yeah. And then Holden, you know, I really liked Holden. Well, I liked Miller too. I liked them both. But I remember I cringed, and it was so great to me that this came up again later. But when they decided that the Martian Navy had destroyed the Canterbury based on what they had, and then his solution to get out of it was to broadcast it to the entire system and say, the Martians just destroyed our ship. And then I would remember just thinking, gosh, I you better be right. You know? But I think that I'm that way anyways, as far as, you know, like news and things like that, in our regular lives. It turned out that he wasn't, you know, and he kept doing it. And then it's fascinating. I'm just so happy that it came up, and that, you know, I really love the authors for doing that. You know, it made me wonder if the authors had differing views. Because the conversations between Holden and Miller were great. when they were talking about deep things like information.
That's one of the reasons I thought you would like this book.
Oh,
because
yeah.
I was reading it, and it starts coming up, and I didn't cringe because I didn't think about it. I'm just reading the story, la-di-da. And then, though, he finds the second piece of information and fires that one out there, and I'm like, well, wait, was that a good idea?
Yeah.
And when you get to the point, and I was surprised, I have to say, that Miller and Holden meet up halfway into the book instead of at the end, which would be more traditional for us to kind of put things together ourselves as we're watching both of them. They meet up and go, what? Here's what I know. Here's what I know. Let's fight it together. They meet up halfway through, so you have so much great interaction between these really different people.
Yeah.
And I was doing the same thing and saying, wow, this book is about how do you handle important information. That's, and it's espousing both points of view. They have a point of view, the book has a point of view, but they let these two duke it out.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense. I mean, they have repeated conversations about, and how did that work out for you, letting this go? And he's like, really? How did it work out keeping it secret? And so, because what you've got is the righteous captain who is himself as transparent as he knows how to be, because that's how you live the good life and take care of your people. And then you have a detective who, in my opinion, and the second book kind of starts to develop this and look at it, he is what Holden would be if Holden hadn't had such a good life. Because Miller is also a really righteous man. He's sticking by what he knows needs to be done. He's been broken. He's been abandoned by the people who he loved.
And this is Miller you're talking about, right?
Yeah, Miller.
Right.
Miller,
sorry. That's okay. Yep.
But he, too, has his code. He, too, as Naomi points out later when Holden is so furious with him, and she's like, are you kidding me? You are both uncompromising, but you have very different frames of reference for it.
Yeah, yeah, that was something. Yeah, so the first thing that I would point to is this argument over information.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second thing that I would point to between them is, you know, Holden's very much, we're going to bring this guy to trial. And Miller is very much, we need to solve this problem right now. You know, meaning, you know, there was one point at which he killed somebody. And Holden was just like, you know, you're going to find your own ride home now.
Yeah, like, I'm kicking you out of the family.
Yeah, because they had a conversation earlier where he's like, don't kill anybody, all right?
Right.
Just don't kill anybody today.
But the worst thing is, as the events are, as the conversation is going along with Dresden, who's the one who is talking everybody into his point of view, you can see his logic working on Fred.
Mm-hmm,
you can see it working on Holden. Even Miller's feeling it. And I was feeling it. And I'm like, oh no, he's right. Don't listen to him. Please don't listen to him. Yeah, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And so when Miller shoots him, I was so relieved.
Oh, wow. How about that?
How did you feel?
I was surprised. I was just like, what? You know, I thought, you know, what? Yeah, it was like, you know, the villain, you know, it surprised me, you know, not only in the action that he did, but also because they just eliminated this guy who was like the bad guy,
right.
You know, and he's gone. And we're still in volume one. It was like done. You know what I mean? So it did surprise me. It was a cool choice by the authors.
Right.
And it certainly made a point, you know, with what Miller's saying. And then to add to, on top of that, like you were saying, Holden talked to Naomi about it later. And Naomi was like, no, that did need to be done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that surprised me. So she was saying, yeah, you know, this guy can. And it was just like what you were saying. She was saying this guy was able to talk himself into doing these things. And he was there talking, and, you know, that seems just to be his knack. And we needed to take care of that. You know, the very least, he needed to be put somewhere where he can't talk to people.
Right.
You know, so that eliminated that situation. And the guy was a bad guy. I mean, I'm not denying that. There was no doubt whatsoever that he did what they knew that he did. So.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it comes down again to because they're also kind of examining you need both things. You need the upfront, transparent, quixotic guy like Holden who wouldn't kill somebody just because they're bad.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not the right way to handle things. But you also kind of need Miller. You need somebody who will hold on to stuff and look for patterns, look for information, see how things are shaking out, and who will take action when it's needed, even when it's the action no one else is ready to do, mm-hmm. because he thinks it's the right thing. Now, can you trust those people, either one of them? I think what we're shown in the book is if they're righteous men, they're doing the best they can, you can trust them. But so many people are untrustworthy or their judgment isn't good.
Right, right. Yeah, and then that brings us back to the information thing. So mm-hmm. Holden is, in this book, you know, the one who disseminates all information, right? And then Miller is like, you know, at one point he said, okay, you said the Martians did it. And we found out later that that wasn't true. And then we found out, you know, or you blamed these guys, right? It was Earth, right? And then look at the wars that are going on. Look at the people right. that are dying as a result of what you're doing. And the thing is, you could be being manipulated. The information that you have, we know isn't correct. And then Holden said, I'm not accusing anyone. I'm just providing information. It's basically like he's saying, I am not passing any judgment on anybody. I'm just giving the information to the world to the universe, right? Or to the solar system in this case. And everybody's making their own decisions. Yeah. And Miller is like, well, we know what decisions they're going to make based on what you're sending. Therefore, you better be damn sure that what you're sending is absolutely true. And you don't know that.
Right.
And man, both arguments were really good. Mm-hmm. But I got to say, I think that I side with Miller.
Oh, me too. And because, I think the book does. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can take that and you can look at now WikiLeaks and Snowden right. and all this other yeah. stuff, and you're like, someone could easily manipulate those people into releasing something that's absolutely not true, and the effect that it would have is profound.
Well, look at the confusion, and in this case, it's something that's not starting a war, as far as I know. But look at the confusion over this idea that the Russians did or didn't manipulate stuff in the vote, that Trump or his people did or didn't get together with the Russians ahead of time. And what that does is it paralyzes everything.
It does, yeah. If the Russians were trying to do something, they have succeeded. They couldn't have asked for a better result than they're right. seeing.
Right.
They just got to be like, hey, we just did some awesome stuff here. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's just, yeah. And I look at everything, you know, I'm at a time in politics right now where I'm looking at both sides and I'm just open mouthed at the entire thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just agree. Absolutely totally. Amazing. So, yeah. but if we could only trust the information that we had, that would help. But I can't yeah. even do that. I have no idea what the truth is about most things.
And nobody will know for 100 years or so, right. really. I mean, when they can look back at it properly. Yeah.
To me, it's been very disconcerting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I feel like it's affected my life, you know. It really has, you know, even though I try not to let it. You know, it's just, also, it's made me question a lot of things that didn't deserve to be questioned, you know. Just, it's like, you know, with politics, it's like, what is my bedrock, you know? Well, my bedrock is, you know, Christ.
Yeah.
And you got to remember that, you know, you got to remember that. This is transcendent of everything that's happening.
Yeah, that's the thing, because this kind of stuff has been going on forever.
Absolutely it has, yeah.
Genesis. Read, you know, anything. Read, okay, don't read the Bible. Read Gilgamesh. Read, you know, Beowulf. Read whatever. I mean, people have been trying to do the right thing and choosing different ways to do it and then not resting their faith in something that's solid.
Right, right.
And every time you do that, you're disappointed and broken.
Yeah, and that's what this whole thing has been a reminder about for me.
Mm-hmm.
you know, realizing that certain things I have rested on incorrect things, I guess is the best way to put that.
Well, and we'll continue to do that because, you know, there are good people and good things in the world, and we want to believe in them, and we should be able to. It's just that, what is it, the thing of be innocent as a dove and wise as a serpent or something?
Mm, yeah.
That's, how do we balance that?
Mm.
You know? Because, yeah, and you're right, and you can only do it a lot of times by trusting in Christ. He's the one who won't lie to us.
Yeah.
Even when we're kind of lost, even when we're like Miller. And Miller at one point says he tried to have faith. He wanted to believe in something wonderful, but he couldn't. And then, hold on 1 second, I'm going to get this. He says later, he goes, what if every horrible, awful thing that happened to me was designed to put me right here, right now, where I will do the one thing that nobody wants to do?
Yeah, yeah. I highlighted because, that same passage.
And because that's the thing where you look at it and say, we don't know what the big plan is. And so, and look at what Jesus went through, or even other, you know, the prophets and all this stuff. It's, you know, God's ways aren't always the comfortable ways. Mm. They're often not, but they're the ways that will be the best for every individual. If that makes sense.
Sure it does. Yeah.
You know, the big plan will work out for everyone. And that's what, at the end, Miller's trying to do. And, you know, here's the thing I love. The thing about this book is it never forgets the individual is important, because Miller has no person with him, but he has a vivid imagination. And so once he started looking for Julie and building what he knows of her character, she is an imaginary person who goes around with him. He's bouncing things off of her kind of as a safety check or sanity check, which is kind of funny. And then Holden has Naomi. And also his crew.
Yeah.
But Naomi's the one. And at one point, Holden says, well, then how do I know what to do? Because Miller has been saying, you're the one who put all this out here. Put something out there that will stop them fighting. And he's like, how? And he goes, well, ask yourself, what would Naomi do? And so he's taking it back to the individual again. Because when we start thinking of the people and the government and the this and that, we're forgetting that we're all individuals. And so when Miller is on that Eros, after Eros has essentially become sentient, which also a huge surprise when Eros jumps and avoids the missiles. And I'm like, what just happened?
<That's>
it starts flying around the universe. You know, you're like, oh, we're all
and
in
And after
trouble.
They stole that ship from the Mormons, too.
I know.
That was a fascinating subplot, but yeah,
thought,
go ahead.
I liked that subplot. As
Me
the Mormons are going to go out to the stars.
Yep.
I thought that was great.
It was great.
Yeah. But what happens is in Miller trying to do the right thing for everybody in general and going to blow up Eros before it can do tons of harm or send it to the sun, I guess, where it'll blow up or burn up, he finds Julie, who is not dead.
Hmm.
He is able to save Julie. And this, reading this the second time, it really hit me, because what he did was help Julie not be a victim.
Hmm.
All she ever wanted to do her whole life was not be a victim of her rich family, of people who attacked her, of, you know, anything like that. She was for people. And she was being used by the proto-molecule and whoever set it into motion, Dresden and his gang. And even though the actions that Eros was taking were hers, they were unconscious. He's the one who brought her back to herself and let her make her own decision.
Yeah.
Which was she
that
didn't want
powerful
to destroy
thought.
Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep,
and
very
so,
good.
Yeah, and so at the end, hold on, let me find it. And you probably have this highlighted too. Fred Johnson's going to go broker the peace agreement between Earth and Mars, and Holden finds him because they wanted Holden there as a symbol of everything that, you know, we got saved.
Oh, uh-huh, and, at the end, yeah, in the epilogue.
At the very, very end, and he says, you know, he says, you need to talk about Miller. And Fred Johnson's going, look, we don't need a real man with a complex life. We need a symbol of the belt, an icon. Hmm. That's what got us here, Holden said. Icons, symbols, people without names. All of those protogen scientists were thinking about biomass and populations, not Mary, who worked in supply and raised flowers in her spare time. None of them killed her. And Fred Johnson says, you think they wouldn't have? And Holden says, I think if they were going to, they owed it to her to know her name, all their names. And you owe it to Miller to not make him into something he wasn't.
Hmm.
And so he's making the argument, which Fred Johnson's like, at one point he's like, and for a moment he was tempted. In that hesitation between drawing breath and speaking, part of him wondered what would happen if he shed the patterns of history and spoke about himself as a man, about the Joe Miller who he'd known briefly, about the responsibility they all shared to tear down the images they held of one another and find the genuine, flawed, conflicted people they actually were.
Hmm.
It would have been a noble way to fail. And then he goes on with his regular speech.
Yeah, very nice.
But that was the subtext to, you have to be careful what you do with information because it's always more complex and everything, and people themselves matter. And that's what Miller was able to get across to Holden that makes him a more complete, righteous man. You know, because that's what he is. He cares about the individuals. He cares about his team.
Mm-hmm.
He's able to think of everybody else that way now.
Yep. Yeah, that's powerful stuff.
And it's the last thing they say in the book. Mm-hmm. It's clearly a message they're interested in.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that a lot. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
I also thought it was interesting putting Don Quixote in there a little bit.
Don Quixote. Show me that.
Because the ship, when Holden names it, the Rocinante.
Oh, okay. I didn't make that connection, but go ahead.
Well, that's it's. They point that out in the book, but it's pretty brief where they talk about I think she's Don Quixote's love interest, right?
Uh-huh.
And so he calls her the Rocinante because nobody knows that. Well, the way Miller finds her is he's going through all those bills of lading for ships that took off, and he sees a ship that's caught because he can't find anything that would match what he thinks they should be on or where they're going or anything. And a ship catches his eye where he's like, wait, why is this ship taking gas to this planet or whatever when this planet provides gas? It's something like that. He's like, that doesn't make any sense. So he looks into it and says, the ship name is this. And he goes, wait a minute, I know that name. And he's like, Holden, is that you? Are you on a quixotic mission? Okay. And later, I think it's Holden who's going, Miller is smart. And maybe it's Naomi, but I think it's Holden. He goes, he found us based on our freaking ship name. That's how well he knew us.
That's cool.
And knew me.
That's right.
Yeah. And both of them are romantics. They're both quixotic. They both have their windmills that they'll tilt at for their ultimate purpose, even if it makes them look stupid.
True. Yep.
Yeah, so they're like two sides of the same coin.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I didn't make that connection. I listened to a lot of this. But yeah, I must have missed that part.
I didn't care for the reading.
Oh, you didn't?
Well, it might be because I'd read the book first and then you said, oh, I have the audiobook.
Uh-huh.
So I was listening going, none of this sounds like I think it should sound.
Oh, okay.
So none of the people, so I just didn't listen to it.
Yeah, gotcha.
You liked it though?
Oh yeah, I liked it fine.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and I had the ebook and the audiobook, so I was flipping between the two.
Okay.
Because when I do the audio or ebook, it goes faster.
Yes. Yeah. I had the ebook. In fact, I had to buy it because I couldn't get a hold of the copy from the library. And I was like, okay, I'll probably read this one again sometime. I'll just plump for the money. And so I liked it.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, it's funny because you get done and you think, oh, okay, that's great. What's the next one? And I don't need to read this again. But reading it again to talk about it with you, like I said this at the beginning, I really realized how well done this book was.
Mm, nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One of the things that Dresden said that was really powerful to me you know, and Dresden again was the bad guy.
Oh yeah.
But it said, you know, Dresden had stood back up as he delivered this speech, his face shining with the zeal of a prophet. So that's feeding right into what you're saying. Mm-hmm. He's influencing him. He says, what we are doing is the best and only hope of humanity's survival. When we go out there, we'll be facing gods. Right?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's a powerful image, you know, because we don't know what's out there. And he says, yeah, whoever sent this Senate so long ago, and who knows what's happened to them since. Right?
Right.
You know, they started there, and we started from, you know, wherever we started from.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows what they are now. And also interesting was that he made high-functioning sociopaths in order to pull this off.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
That was crazy. Yeah.
Well, but he knew, and here's something that's interesting about that is he knew they wouldn't go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
But he thought it was fine. So he's the sociopath, obviously, that we start from.
That's right.
Because for me, for a long time reading this book, something that was annoying me and making, well, at least from the time we met Dresden and understood that somebody did this on purpose, what I thought was a flaw was they, because I was like, nobody would do this. No one. No one would do this to a whole planet or whatever in order to see what happens. I was like, I do not buy this. I don't think this is right.
Hmm.
And at some point in the book, doesn't Naomi say that and Holden explains it to her?
Yeah, I think you're right. Yep. I don't have that marked.
Unfortunately, I didn't mark that part.
Yeah, I didn't mark it either. But I do remember it.
Naomi had exactly my problem. So I was like, oh, these guys are good. These authors are good. They saw the thing that was really bugging me. Where I was like, well, I don't believe this, but I'm going to still read the book. Finish it.
Yeah.
And she brought it up. Yeah. And he answered it. And whatever way he answered it, I went, oh, okay. I can go with that.
That's cool. You know, I like when authors do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I really like that Mormon generation ship idea. That was really cool because it just rang so true to me as something that they would do.
So it's good that it did to you too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So they're making a generation ship and for the glory of God, they said it was going to be, they called it the Nauvoo. Which is in, you know, part of a Mormon culture.
Oh, okay.
That's
I figured it had to be.
Yeah, it's a town. And yeah, the Nauvoo would be the greatest temple mankind had ever built. It would shepherd its crew across through the uncrossable gulfs of interstellar space, humanity's best hope of reaching the stars. Yeah, so that was neat. And then they stole it and tried to ram the Eros with it. It just made me laugh. But it survived, so it's still good. I don't know, do they bring it up again? Is it ever brought up again?
Yeah, it does get brought up again, but not as a main...
Not as a weapon?
No.
Did they leave and did they get to leave?
No, I don't. That never gets brought up, although they're pretty pissed off. The Mormons were great. That does get brought up.
Oh, okay. I would imagine they'd be upset.
Yeah. Yeah, the next book is set on Ganymede.
Oh, okay.
Or starts on Ganymede, let's put it that
way.
Yeah,
and it was neat, you know,
different things.
Some of those details, those engineering details are fun too. Like they went, when they first came across the Nauvoo, they were going to a station, which is basically looked like a spider, you know, a giant station that looked like a spider that would fly from place to place and do engineering jobs.
Yeah.
That was awesome. Give me a job there.
Really
I want to work there.
Yeah. And I liked the character of Fred Johnson, the butcher of Anderson Station.
Yeah.
Who also is one of those righteous men. You know, it's when they tell about his career, which is very illustrious in the U.S. military or the Earth military, I guess. And they talk about him looking around Anderson Station, then he disappears and then he reappears as a belter.
Right.
And he is a good guy. You don't know what to expect, but he is a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to do the right thing.
Trying to do the right stuff, yeah.
But with different experience and different knowledge. And so he provides a different perspective on it. And there's not just one kind of good man. Maybe that's part of the lesson.
The good part
is the righteous part, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
I also really liked, there was one little thing where, because I really thoroughly approved of the plan to just throw that thing into the sun.
Yeah.
And at the end, and they wind up on Venus, you know, with all these things are happening. We can't see beneath the cloud cover, but the readings coming out are kind of scary and interesting. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I liked is, I think it's Fred Johnson toward the end says something about, I wish you'd have, oh, right, because these 12-story towers or whatever are sticking out of the clouds now.
Oh, yeah.
And just built themselves. And it's like, we don't know what these things are made of.
2 kilometers high. Yeah.
Yeah, 2 kilometers. Exactly. Yeah. And Fred, I think it's Fred Johnson who says, so, you know, this is happening on Venus. And Holden's like, yeah. Well, maybe I thought it would be creepier to have those things sticking out of the sun. And that was the first time I went, oh, my gosh, maybe the sun wouldn't have killed it.
Oh, wouldn't have it.
You'd have messed up the whole solar system.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Wild, wild.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah. So I'm looking on Goodreads right now, and every one of these books is over 4 stars. Mm-hmm. And with like 30,000 plus ratings.
Yeah.
It's amazing. So yeah, people are really enjoying them.
And I have to say, for my saying I read 3 and that's all I'm going to read, don't think I didn't read those second 2 books. And in the last half especially was just reading as fast as I possibly could.
Uh-huh.
It's just, it was so slow starting and so much information getting into it that in each case, that I was like, it's just lost some of what made the first book really good. And I was like, And Rose said it too. She said, you know, I would really like to go on and read these other books, but this writing style and this slowness of the beginning, and you'll see that comment on even some of the 3 and 4 star and some of the 5 star reviews of these books is like, wow, just such a slow start.
Mm, wow.
And of course you felt that yourself. I didn't feel it for this book, but you felt that way.
Yeah, I felt, it took me a little while to get into it.
But, you know, they can write action scenes like nobody's business.
Those scenes where, like when they went out to the tight, what was it called? The station, and they were flying at really high G's, and they were really being pressed seats. And then they like slammed on the brakes. You know, they were trying to pretend to be just a container that had broke free. Yeah. That was riveting. I mean, that was really riveting stuff. All those action scenes. Yeah.
Yeah. When the place has been flooded with radiation and Miller and Holden are trying to make their way back to the ship.
Yeah.
And they're continually running into, you know, monsters and people who are security people are trying to stop them. They're like, oh my gosh, really?
Yeah.
Or when Miller even, and these are slower bits because there's more going on, but when Miller has got his little wagon and his kill switch and his bomb.
Mm.
And he's like, I think I can make it to Julie, and all the stuff they're describing. I mean, it was like some weird fantasy movie, but I could see it. I mean, they did such a good job of it.
Cool.
I was continually on edge the whole time.
Yeah, that's great.
But yeah, then the action stuff where they're, you know, going in and shooting and.
Yeah, just, really well done in print. I'm just looking online here. I was trying to find like a wiki page for the entire series. Do you have any idea, are they going to go to 7, you know, or is this an open-ended, endless series of books?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just curious if they have said anything about that, because I haven't found that they have.
Oh, yeah.
But they are 6 in, and I don't know about 7.
Yeah, and like I say, that's why I was going, you know, maybe the TV series is fairly faithful, and so further on I can see what happens after book 3.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch.
Or maybe in a year or two, I'll go, I'll put up with the slow start and the 5 or 6 characters who I don't need to hear from, these 3, half of them at least.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll try it, but just not right now.
And they're putting out novellas too. Looks like 4 novellas.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And, I don't know if their website is really, really old, but it says season 2 of The Expanse premieres tonight. And I can't find a date associated with it, so I don't know. So they have a cover for book 7, it looks like, Persepolis Rising.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, but it doesn't say anything about it being the last, so interesting.
But also I would say to anybody who's interested, well, I guess we've already talked about so much stuff. If you're listening by now, you've read it. You know, definitely try the second book. It's, mm-hmm. you know, don't just take my word for it.
Yeah. I might do that, you know, on audio.
We'll see. Since you enjoyed the audio. Definitely do that.
Yeah, just keep on it. But yeah, I have some other stuff in ahead of it, but you bet. Yeah.
I love and there's some good characters in now. All the of them who you just love or love to hate. Good. You know. They're still good with the characters and everything.
I'm sure some of those sociopaths that were created by Dresden will show up.
I really don't know what you're talking about. I'm saying nothing about anything.
All right, then. Yeah, because there's a few of them out there. Yeah.
Yep.
I love it.
I guess there are.
Cool. Yeah.
Okay.
But fun book. Thanks for picking it.
I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah. It was one of those that it was out there forever, and it was like, you know, I really should read that. You know, I really should read that. Yeah. You know, and then, now I got the
those
opportunity.
Those are not books anybody wants to read. The ones I should read, I don't think so.
Or the one, it's just because it was for the reasons of I think I would like it. You know, it looks like my kind of stuff.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, kind of like me with people going, you'd like this, Julie. And I'm like, yeah. Probably, but I'm not mean.
Yeah. You'd like this 1,000-page classic novel.
That's my thing. That's what I push on people.
That's right.
Come on, everybody. Let's all read this classic novel. We'll love it. 1,000 pages.
Good stuff. Yeah. Well, cool. All right. So what's coming up next for us? Let's see.
Next.
Three Godfathers.
It's a movie for Christmas that connects with the first Christmas movie we ever talked about, I believe.
That's exciting.
Thank you, Godfathers.
I love it. So just to make sure I've got the right one, Three Godfathers is the John Ford movie?
Yes. Okay. What is Christmas without a John Wayne, John Ford Western?
Excellent. Okay, because I was looking for it yesterday, and I'm like, okay, I've got to make sure I can get this. Found out I can rent it on Amazon, which is wonderful.
Oh, great.
And I was like, is this the one? I think it's the one. So I wanted to make sure that there wasn't another one.
There were actually a bunch of movies made of this story.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And this is, I think, the latest one except for Tokyo Godfathers, which is not exactly the same.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's it. That's the one.
Wonderful. All right. Well, I will be ready.
I hope so. I think you'll like it.
I'm excited. Well, cool. Well, all right. Well, thank you very, very much, everybody. And thank you, Julie, again for picking this book.
You're very welcome. I'm so glad you liked it.
You bet.
We'll talk to everybody again in a couple weeks.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.